has always been the person that asked them to speak here. The programming chair who asked this gentleman to speak has to finish up some stuff and get ready to go to work this afternoon. So he asked me if I'd be willing to introduce this speaker. And I immediately told him it'd be an honor to do so, and I'm grateful for the opportunity. I can't remember exactly when I first met this man. This is my 11th time at this event, and I know I've seen him here every year but one. And I always look forward to our clean time countdown because he's usually the first person to stand up. And the year he wasn't here, I not only did I worry about him, but I was a little disappointed because it knocked our clean time countdown. And then when I ran into him a little while later, I'm like, why did you come? And he said, well, I had car trouble. I said, did you have phone trouble too? please don't do that to us again. I had the blessing of hearing him share in my home group a few weeks ago. And every time I've heard him share, I've always gotten something from it. Not only because I respect him as a predecessor in this process, but because he's a man that every time I talk to him, whether just outside a meeting, in a meeting, always touches my heart. And probably most importantly, and one of the reasons I'm so happy to have him as our spiritual speaker, is he touches my spirit. Because he truly passes on a message of recovery. And with that, I'd like to give you Ron L. from Marysville.
Hi, everyone. I'm an addict named Ron. And as my sponsor reminds me, that's probably the most important thing I'm going to say. Anything after this is going to go downhill. I also share this generally when I speak. I'm here this morning through no fault of my own, really. If I'd have my way, I'd be dead. Or I'd be locked away in an institution, or I'd still be in the frantic existence of an active addiction. I didn't have my way, and I'm forever grateful on a daily basis that I didn't have my way. I went to a meeting Monday night. This past Monday night to hear a lady speak, a friend of mine's wife, and I ran into my first sponsor, that's his home group. And as things would still have it, I got there about an hour and a half early, because the way I thought it was going to take me longer to get there, went and got a coffee, came back, and Dawn pulled up. I didn't even hear him pull up, but I see this white hair, white bearded guy walking across the parking lot, and he's like, what happened to your window? I had it taped up, and the power window went down. I'm like, Dawn, I got the power window went, oh, looks like you got some kind of trouble. And I thought it was interesting because on the 8th of September here, he'll be celebrating 50 years in the fellowship where I found my recovery. And like the that's a disclaimer I have to get out of the way up front. My clean date is April 4th, 1973. And in 1973, there was no Narcotics Anonymous in Western Pennsylvania. I didn't even know that Narcotics Anonymous existed. And I went to my first meeting in February of 1970, so I didn't walk into a 12-step room and get it, you know, but so I actually got clean in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I owe a large measure of my recovery to that experience, as the preface of the basic text talks about how we in Narcotics Anonymous owe our gratitude to Alcoholics Anonymous for helping get this whole thing underway. And the steps and traditions are essentially the same. Then it was interesting, in the course of that meeting, Lori, my buddy's wife, was sharing about the desperation and how she and her husband Jim were together even during that, during their act of addiction. And she talked about how they were trying to pay the electric and then trying to keep the water on. The electric went off, the water's on, the pump isn't working, and the vehicles, the windshield wipers don't work, one of the headlights are out. She said, you know how you had to tape up your windows? And I was sitting next to Dawn, he gave me one of these shots. So anyway, I just wanted to share that. But what it is to be a spiritual speaker, I don't know. When I was asked to do it, I'm thinking, why are they asking me to do this? And then, as my first sponsor, Dawn, had directed me early in my early years, I think probably the first time I was asked to speak at a meeting, he said, here's what we do. You know, I suggest that you get connected with your higher power and pray before you go up there. So I've been doing that ever since. So when I did that this morning, I went in to pray, and the God of my understanding reminded me that I know a whole hell of a lot about Step 6 than I do, more about Step 6 than I do about spirituality. And I came out of there, and I went up to Drew, and I said, you know what, we got to change the topic. I just had to talk with my higher power, and he said, I know more about Step 6, but what my Creator reminded me is I need to bring him here, and he's with me everywhere I go. So hopefully I'll get out of the way. He'll kick in, and you'll get the message you're supposed to get here this morning. What I can tell you is I didn't know anything about spirituality until I got clean. And it says in our literature, this is a spiritual, not religious program known as Narcotics Anonymous. Thank God. Thank God. And thank God for the third step that I didn't even want. I have to admit, I did not want the third step to be part of the steps. I actually called a group conscience because they told me I had the power to do that when I got a little home group. And I wanted to rewrite the steps. I suggested we could kick out about three of them. Three was one of them, the third, the fifth, because first of all, I wasn't convinced there was a God, and if there was, I wasn't turning my will over to him. You know what I mean? This is my life. I ain't giving this up for nothing. And the fifth step, I thought, you know, if you have to write this fourth step or do whatever, that's fine. And if there is a God, he already knows, but there ain't nobody going to know some of the shit I did. So I thought that one could go, and I certainly thought nine could go. Because I was convinced, being the victim that I came in here as, there were more people that owed me amens than I owed them. I called them amens, you know. And they owed me more than I owed them. So, and I was serious, and those guys were like patient with me, and they're telling me, these things work long before you got here. They're going to work long after you're gone. We're going to think we're going to keep them, and that's the way the vote went. So, but that just, I use that to illustrate where I was at. I mean, there's certain things. I didn't want, you know, and today when I see people, newcomers come into the rooms, at least they have enough social skills more often than not to keep their mouth shut. I didn't even have that. Do you know what I mean? When I heard that word, that three-letter word, God, I'd be, oh, here we go again. And I couldn't just sit back there and keep my mouth shut. I'd be like, here we go with that God shit again. And there were times I'd just walk out of the room. I'm out of here. Forgive me, but, well, he knows me, so. That's just the way it was. That's just the way. I didn't want to hear it. I didn't want to hear about it. They said it wasn't religion. I didn't think it should. So, but I didn't know about spirituality. What I did, I had a counselor along the way who was a minister, and he was talking to me about this spark, and that there's this spark of hope inside of us. And he said, yours didn't go out. I was trying to convince him I was hopeless. Mine's out. No, no. If it was out, we wouldn't be having this conversation. There's a spark, and you need to find a way to feed that spark and let it develop into a flame, a radiant flame. And that little spark of hope was my only chance, he said. That's your only chance. And I didn't know a lot about what he was talking about, and I was convinced mine was out, but I'm happy to say, obviously, it wasn't. And the connection for me came, I struggled. When I say I'm here through no fault of my own, I struggled early in and out of the rooms because I want a recovery my way. I'll go to your meetings during your week, but I'm a young kid. I'm 22 years old or 23 years old. I don't go on weekends. Weekends are, you know what I mean. I mean, I could not wrap my mind around total abstinence. I was coming to these meetings to find out how this thing worked. You know what I mean? I knew that these people can't be. Like, what about Christmas? What about New Year's Eve? You know what I mean? Forever? Like, you just don't. I couldn't grasp that whole concept of abstinence. So my addiction progressed. And when I got beat up enough, I walked in with all that remorse, shame, and guilt. I crawled in. However I got here, I'd get back. Because something had happened from coming to these meetings. A beautiful thing would happen. I got a sponsor and I got a home group out of defense. I got sick of people asking me, hey, kid, you got a sponsor? You got a home group? I'd be like, yeah, I'm working on it. You're going to work yourself right into the grave, kid. You know what I mean? You need to get a sponsor and a home group. So out of self-defense, I got a sponsor, Dawn, this guy I was talking about. And I appointed him. And I need to remind myself why. Because my self-esteem was so low. My fear of rejection was so great that I knew if I asked any one of those guys to be my sponsor, they'd look at me and say, like, are you out of your mind? Me sponsor you? No. You know? I didn't want to risk that. So they did tell me to find someone that has what you want and who you can relate to, who you have similarities with. And this guy, Don, he told me about how you find a sponsor. So I appointed him. And he overheard a conversation I was having after a meeting with somebody. And I said, my sponsor, Don, says, and I quoted him. And he's like, hey, Ron, when you're done there, could you come over and help me clean the coffee pots? And I said, oh, yeah, I'd be glad to. You know, I was like that compliant. I'll do it. I wanted to look good on the outside and not change on the inside. So give me a job. I can do that. So I went over and we're cleaning the coffee. He said, this sponsor, Don, of yours. Do I know? I'm like, yeah, it's you. He said, well, it's a good idea to let somebody in on the secret. You know what I mean? If you want a sponsor. And he put me in a position to make me ask. He said, usually we ask. And I'm like, what, you don't want to be? You know, trying to put him on the defensive. I didn't say that. But generally we ask. And I finally said, Don, will you be my sponsor? And he looked me right in the eyes, and he put out his hand, he put his other arm over my shoulders, and he said, I'd be honored to. Like Rich said today, it's an honor. It just blew me away, and it still blows me away. So I had a sponsor, and I joined a home group. And it was a little fledgling group in Jeanette. And there were like five members, and then I joined. And they'd tell, why don't you come down? We need support down there. So, you know, I got sick of people asking me. So after a Friday night meeting, I said, loud enough for everyone to know because I wanted them off my back. All right, I'll join your little group. What do I do? Jack said, come over here. They're like, see Jack, he'll take care of you. He signs me up. What's your date? They called it different than a clean date, but essentially, what's your clean date? I told him it was about to change a few more times. He wrote it down. He took my name, last initial, and he said, all right, you're a home group member. He said, but like any home, we have chores here. And these are yours. We're going to give you a key to the cupboard. You'll put out the literature. You can get the coffee pot out and get the coffee next to it. The coffee's been fine here since we started this little group. We don't want you messing it up. And they drank out old porcelain cups that were the church's, so you had to get the cups out and little dessert tray dishes, plates for the donuts. So that was my job to put that stuff out. And at the end of the meeting, somebody had to clean these things, and that was my job due to dishes. So I had some little jobs to do in this group. When I tell my story, I often talk about how I never felt connected. I never felt a part of. I never felt like I belonged. As far back as I can remember, it's always been me and them, me and them, me and them. Me and my family members, me and my siblings, me and my teammates, me and my schoolmates, me and them. But never us. Never we. So about 6 months into my recovery, I think, or it might have been while I was still bouncing in and out. I really can't remember. But what was important is I got waylaid because my sponsor, Don, said, someday you're going to hear your story up here. And they had a guy from the Indiana area come down. He got him to speak. And this guy had smoked some weed and shit. You know what I mean? And I, like, made the connection. And after the meeting was over, and some of the things paralleled my life, and it was like, this was it. This is what I was waiting for. This was a moment. And I couldn't wait until after the meeting to talk to him. And we got carried away with our conversation. And then I'm like, well, I got to go do the dishes. I walked back into the kitchen, and here's this little old lady, Emma, doing the dishes. My dishes. Emma, those are my dishes. And she jumped back, and I could still see the soap stuff. She wasn't even one of us. She came with her husband. She went to this Al-Anon thing, you know what I mean? She wasn't, and she's doing my dishes, and she's like, I was just trying to help. I said, Emma, I do the dishes here. And this other guy, Jack, was in the back, and he put his arm over mine, and he's like holding on to me, because he knew that I could be like a loose can, and he wasn't too sure where it was. And he embraces me like this. He's like, Emma, don't mind Ron here. He's one of us alcoholics that did one too many of those other drugs. He burned out one too many brain cells. And he said it in such a way that I was laughing, he was laughing, and then she laughed. And she said, I just was trying to help, honestly. I said, Emma, you can dry. So I did the dishes. Now, don't you know it bothered me? You know, like, why did I come so overbearing to this woman? And it bothered me all week, and I talked to my sponsor about it. Pray. The conclusion I came to is I belong. I finally belonged somewhere. But what made me a member was my chores, that I was contributing to that group. That made me. And so come the next Friday, I was like trying to make some semblance of an amends, and I was letting Emma know that I was sorry, and I shared this, how I realized I belong, and she started crying. I hate emotions. I don't know about you, especially in somebody else. I'm like, don't cry. You know what I mean? But I finally belonged. I finally connected. And that was significant. The next significant time was April 4th, 1973, when I had made a decision to end my life. My best thinking. And I really was thinking about other people. I thought my two kids, 1 and 3, would be better off without me. Their poor mother, my estranged spouse, would be better off without me. My parents would be better off because I was a problem child from the get-go. The oldest of 7 kids, you know, locked up, embarrassment, headlines on paper, Irwin man narrowly escapes youth, and there's this article, and a picture of the car that I took over a 50-foot cliff. And I had put people through so much, caused so much wreckage, that I was convinced the best thing I could do for them, for my previous bosses, for anybody, would just be to rid myself. And so I made a decision to end my life. And I went as far as buying the rope from the hardware store, took it up the north end of town. There was a metal railroad bridge. I tied it off. And I was, you know, I begged my wife at the time to, she had a PFA out on me. Could I please see the kids? And I wanted to let them know Daddy loved them. 1 and 3 years old. Daddy loved them. I wanted them to have that memory like they had remembered. Like any action I did would have confirmed love. It wouldn't have. And she knew something was weird, but I wasn't, you know, and I apologized to her and thanked her. And she's like, what's up? What's going on with you? I'm like, nothing. I wasn't telling anyone. And I watched the sunset that night, and I knew it was going to be my last. And tears came into my eyes, and I walked up the hill heading towards this bridge. It happened to be a Tuesday night. I happened to pass the church where I went to my first 12-step meeting, and I was going to go in and thank those guys for trying. They failed, like my recovery was their responsibility. They failed, but I wanted to let them know that I, because you know what, they were always there. And the beautiful thing that kept making me go back in was that sponsor told me when someone's up there speaking, because he'd see me nodding and shit, you know, he'd be like, you need to pay attention and try to hear, because they were mostly speaker meetings. And you never know. He said, every one of those people up there have something for you. And it might be something that'll save your life someday. You know what I mean? And I would try to pay attention, and a wild thing would happen. I don't know about you, but I always had this noise in my head, reminding me what a no-good SOB I was. I was never going to amount to nothing. You're a bum. You have been all your life. You always will be. You know, it was all this negative stuff. But when I pay attention, it would quiet down. I was getting out of myself and into somebody else. A spiritual thing was happening. And I noticed that, and I liked that. And then it would quiet down for longer periods of time. And what I didn't realize is I was experiencing some serenity, little pieces of serenity. And so this particular day, I went in to thank him. I helped Kenny set up. He was like the only one there. And then a couple guys came in, and they got a coffee and sat at the back table. And the coffee was done by the time we got set up. He said, let's get a cup of coffee and sit down. And I sat across the table from him. And a lot of you have heard me before. I've heard this. But this is where the connection really happened for me. It was like the miracle happened just about the time I was ready to quit. You hear that? For me, that was my experience. And I looked across the table, and I didn't generally like to show my emotions. I wasn't man enough to cry, I often say, back then, in front of anybody. And the tears started coming, and I said to Kenny, he had his hands behind his head, and he was leaning back. I said to Kenny, Kenny, I can't do this. I cannot do this. And he let out a sigh. And I found out later what that's, he heard the surrender. He heard it. And he pulled his hands from behind his head, and he reached out, and he put his hands over mine. And as he was doing that, he said, you're absolutely right, son. You can. Or you can. We can. And when he said we can, he squeezed my hands. And for me, the connection happened. You know how many times I heard those words? Probably hundreds. from the 3 years I was in and out of the room, but I never felt them until that moment. We can. I had a power greater than myself. I wasn't ready for God yet. I wasn't ready for your God, my God, any God, but I had a power greater than me. And even reason told me that two of us are a power greater than one of us. Yeah. If we got a 16-foot 2x10 and you put Andy on one end and me on the other, we'll do a lot better than, especially if you got to take it off. So two of us were a power greater than one of us. And then I also had this internal dialogue going on called a conscience, this inner voice. And this inner voice said, yeah, kid, you, because everybody called me kid or sonny, or, yeah, kid, you can go kill yourself. Kenny didn't say this. This happened inside. It was like a moment of clarity. You can go kill yourself, but you'll never know if this would work for you. Unless you're willing to do what Kenny, who had like 37 years then, Jack, who had 11, my sponsor, who had 12, you know, all these different periods of Bill had 16. Unless I was willing to do what they did, I'd never know if it would work for me. And I remember chuckling at that thought. You know, like, all right, I'm going to do it, but it ain't going to work. I'll show you. Because nothing ever worked. Why would anything work? But then I started not arguing, not debating, but pretty much doing what people said. And if you told me something helped you get your time, I'm going to try. No matter how stupid it seemed, I'll hit my knees, you know, I'll pray. I don't know what I'm praying to, but you know what? If it worked for Kenny or it worked for Dawn, I'll try. We'll try. I started doing those things. And started trying to follow some steps and take some direction and quit arguing. And guess what? That was April 4th, 1973. I haven't found it necessary to pick up any drugs since that time. What I had to do in my experience, what I had to give up something before I could give up the drugs. I had to give up my way. And then the journey began. The journey began. My sponsor took me through the steps the way they do the steps. And somewhere between 6 and 7, I actually moved to Dubois. I had 2 years clean, and I went up there to start a rehab. And I finished the 12 steps with a guy named Murph up there and through Dawn down here. But Dawn, I maintained as a sponsor, but I needed a day-to-day guy. I needed, you know, a go-to guy. And that was Murph. And just, God just put him in my life, you know what I mean? And it was just an experience that I won't forget. And it probably took me, I guess, I used to think 2 years. It probably took me the better part of 3 years to get through to 12 steps the first time. And then what I realized is the steps kind of worked me for about the next 10 years, 12 years, about the next 10 years. Because what I realized is like I'd be like focusing on a step unconsciously for about a year. And I got up to on step 8 and I was looking at a list again and really looking, you know, on like a day-to-day basis. And then I realized how this thing, I had about 8 years or 9 years then. So, you know, that's just how that went for me. But the steps, you know, I realized that on that day in 73, I'd gone to enough meetings, heard enough stuff. They didn't have you writing like some, and I've since done that, but on the steps. But that night, it was like the first two steps at least hit me. You know what I mean? Because I felt like when I was looking at Kenny, what I felt was empty, worthless, useless, piece of crap. That's how I felt. Like nothing. And it was that connection. It was another way. It was, I'll try your way. And we'll see how that works. So So it was like steps one and two happened. About a month into my recovery, my sponsor told me I need to start writing. I'm like, writing? The only step you wrote back then was the fourth step. And I goes, well, I'm not ready for that. I'm not sure I'm okay with the third step. You know, I still would go there. And he's like, well, you know, that's my suggestion. You might, you know, if you don't want to do that, you might consider another sponsor. But I'd highly suggest you start writing. You've been carrying this stuff around. Well, the thought of finding someone else that I had built that level of trust with was like more overwhelming than writing. So I started writing, and I probably wrote for the better part of a year. And when I look back on that, he knew some things I didn't know. Part of working the third step is simply making a decision to move on. You know, but also, as a result of the writing, I was having some spiritual experiences, and one of the more profound early experiences I had was probably 3 to 4 months into my recovery, when I almost got into a fist fight with a guy because I thought he was like trying to chump me out. You know what I mean? He came in off the streets of Greensburg. He said, man, he was a heroin junkie. And he goes, man, Ron, we were at a halfway house. I heard about you. You had a rep out there, man. Some people think you're a badass. He said, lucky we didn't know each other in our active addiction. I'd have had to kick your ass. I thought he was trying to intimidate me, and the guy was a big guy. And I jumped up and I said, you know what, Nick, I'll tell you what. I learned one thing about so far. I said, I can still do the same things I did, and I don't have to put it in me. So if it's an ass kicking you want, let's go. And somebody interceded. You know what I mean? And I was embarrassed. And they tried to add humor to the situation. They said, yeah, Ron, you could jump up, climb up on his back, jump up on his shoulders, and beat on his head. And I took it like they were siding with him. And I felt that overwhelming loneliness that I had been carrying around in my active addiction. And I just pushed them aside, left that room, went to an empty room in that house, and cried like I never cried before. And I realized what I was crying was years of tears. Years of bitter tears. I cried myself to sleep. And I woke up and this calm feeling came over me. And it was a summer, warm summer day. And I went outside. And this house had hedges around it. And I had no shirt on. It was warm. And I laid on the grass. And I started reflecting on the grass, like each one was a little piece of life. And there were insects living in this grass, and there were microscopic things in this grass. And there were trees, and I focused on the trees, and I thought how many, there was a maple, an elm, and an oak, I remember. And how many trees there are. How many oaks, how many, and then how many trees there must be on the face of the earth. And how many blades of grass. And I was looking at the sky and the vastness of the sky above me. And I started thinking about how many people and about the surface of the earth and what a little tiny speck I was and how insignificant I was. And yet a knowing thing came over me like I have a purpose here. If it's nothing more than to balance out this whole thing, I have a purpose. I may never know entirely what that is, but I had a connection to all of this. You know, that really stuck with me. And I remember writing about that some years later. I had to write a paper for college, and I called it In Humble Dignity, because I felt so small. But yet I felt a purpose. I felt this connection. Not only, and then I thought of the earth and the universe, and I thought of time, and how many people before, and how many people after. And it was like, I don't talk about it a lot, but it was like a profound moment. Another profound moment came when I found myself in the darkness of my room, and I still wasn't praying, I thought. But I was reflecting on some people that had come into my life. My sponsor, Joe, a guy that, he was a real, Kenny, a counselor I had at the time, her husband, who I had formed a friendship with, and other people. The guy that ran this halfway house, we became friends. He was in recovery. And I thought, you know, there's 10 or 12 people, and I'm in the darkness in my room reflecting on this, thinking there's 10 or 12 people that if I had, if my life was hanging in the balance and someone had to make a decision, I would have trusted. And I never was big on trust, you know. I would have trusted any one of them to make the decision. And all of a sudden, I had this warm feeling like I was enfolded in somebody's arms. And tears started rolling down my face. And I was like, God, why am I crying? I'm happy. I'm in my mid-20s. I didn't know you could cry a happy tear. But I'm grateful to say today, most of the tears I've cried since that time are happy tears. They're tears of joy, not so much tears of sorrow. And the longer I've been staying clean, what I'm finding from my experience is that these steps, carving them into our life, working them over and over and over, it's really a journey in self-diminishment. I mean, I don't know about you, but when I went to my first meeting, I thought all eyes were on me. I thought everybody knew, you know, I thought my insides, I was wearing them on the outside. They knew every nasty thing I ever did. You know what I mean? But then there was a side of me that said, oh, they're looking at promising. Oh, they probably were, but whatever they were looking at, I thought I was the center of everything. And the longer I'm around here, the more I see it's just a journey of self-diminishment. I keep getting smaller and smaller. And limitations come in, and that's just the way it goes. But I've had so many experiences. One of them was One of them was in a hospital. And I was under a lot of pain. And I had surgery. I had bypass surgery. And I had an infection. And they had me on this morphine drip. And I would never do that. And I heard someone else sharing this maybe a week or two ago. Their support group would come in and hit the pump, you know, the morphine pump. I'd always let the professional staff do it. I'm an addict, man. It had to be God. You know what I'm saying? But I would try to meditate. And nothing was eliminating the pain completely, but I found meditation helped, some other things helped. But a truth came to me, like the greater the pain I was bearing, the more my spirit was growing. You know, there was like a connection there. And I believe that to be true. You know, I remember my daughter some years back shared with me that after the birth of her first child, she had multiple sclerosis and it crushed me. I mean, that little girl was... She was just always a good student, compliant, I mean, gracious, happy. I mean, she just had this thing about her. Like, I don't even recall her going through the rebellion years in adolescence. You know what I mean? She was an honor student in high school, went to college. She never really harmed. She was like the thought of other people, considered other people. And when she got that, you know where we go. I'm thinking, why her? Why not me? I was such a piece of shit. Why wouldn't you give something like that to me? And when she told me, and it registered, I said, you know what, sweetie, if I could reach inside of you and take that out and give it to me, I'd do it in a heartbeat. She's like, I could understand that, Dad. I'd feel the same way about Carissa Rose, her baby. I understand that. But I found myself maybe a week or so later calling to make amends. I said, one, I'm not God. I don't have the power to do that. But if I did, I would cheat you out of opportunities for spiritual growth. Because in reflecting for that week or whatever between our conversations, I realized that it's been largely through hardship, suffering, and illness that I've had countless opportunities for spiritual growth. And were I to take that from her, I would have cheated her from it. And she's like, and at first it puzzled her why I was apologizing. And then she said, it's funny you say that. Bernie and I, her husband, had a conversation just the night before how all their priorities changed. It was like they were tied up in a material world with graduate school, mortgages, investments, this, that, and the other thing. But all of a sudden they realized that stuff wasn't important. What was important is the time they had for each other, the time they shared. It was like, and that's just been part of my spiritual experience here. And that connection, what I need to say, those guys have a lot to do with, well, how I'm in NA, I'll go there. How I'm in NA is I knew I got confronted with it. I mean, they told me I'm an alcoholic, go to AA. I was still not comfortable with that when somebody said you're an addict. And I'm like, you see any track marks? That's what an addict was to me. And they went through a list of things they found on my person. And every time they said something, everyone in this little group would laugh, and I was getting more and more pissed off. You know what I mean? I didn't think it was funny. But I knew in my heart of hearts that if they ever had a program for drug addicts like this AA thing, I needed to be there. So in 1985 was the time that I like made that connection with NA. Because I'll share, but I don't share how I got here. And this is where my recovery is centered today. You know what I mean? I still maintain a loyalty to the other fellowship, because without them I wouldn't be here. But it's like most of my service work has been involved in NA. It just works for me. Because I knew in my heart of hearts that if they had a program for drug addicts like that, I needed to be there. So I'm home. I'm home. And every time I go to a meeting, I feel that home. And I had a home group, Andy knows, for 15 years in Oakmont. Today it's Murraysville. But I joined that group because a feeling came over me when I'd go to that meeting. I just felt that goosey, comfortable feeling. What I'm happy to say today is most every meeting I walk into, that feeling comes back. So home's like where it's just like with me. It's just like with me. That's my experience. And but those guys, I used to call them Frosty Arrow bastards. Then I came to know them and love them, and I call them Frosty Hair gentlemen. Most of them are gone. Dawn's around. But most of them have since passed on. But what I want you to know is when I went to my first meeting in February of 1970, I walked in there an empty shell of a person. Not a clue who I was. Not a connection, really. Not a connection. Dawn was my first real human connection that I felt. That relationship with my sponsor. As I started getting filled up. I started getting filled up with the love of those guys. And if I had any gift going into that room, I had the ability, some of you would be able to relate to this, push people away. Disconnect and stay disconnected. And these guys, the harder I pushed, the more the force came back. I would say things, the offensive things. And they'd be like, just keep coming back. We're glad to have you. They're killing me with this love. But what they were doing is they started filling up my spirit. And between that time and now, can you imagine 36 years later where how full this spirit is? Because there's so many people in this room that are such a large part of who I am. Who I am. Kenny, it's like he's still with me day in and day out. The guy I had the conversation with. He's a part of who I am. To me, that's spirituality. It's the love. It's the bond. It's the connection. It's the legacy those guys left with me. And the responsibility that I have to carry it on. You know, I'm often reminded, another gift Kenny gave me, I keep going back to that, it's like going home, is he told me, I asked him one day, Kenny, how'd you get all those years? 37. Someone reminded me last year when I got I'm like a year away from that. Who would have thunk it? You know what I mean? But when I asked Kenny, how did you do that? He said, I'm so glad. You helped me so much. He had a way of putting it. I helped him. I want to know how you did this. He said, I got a quick forgetter, and I need to be reminded. And without people like you, and he reached for his billfold, and he pulled it out, and he pulled out this tattered piece of paper that was worn on the edges and already tearing. And he said, I'm going to have to, he shook a little, I'm going to have to rewrite this. This is probably my, I don't know, 10th copy. But he wrote 7 things he had on his list. And the first thing he had was don't drink. For me, it's don't use. Don't use. The next thing he had is go to a meeting. Go to meetings on a regular basis. And he said, I don't know what that is for you. You'll find it. Just keep coming. But as it is, you used every day, you're probably near your whatever. Used every day. You need to come every day. And then the next thing he said is you need a home group. There we go. You need a sponsor. You need to work the steps to the best of your ability. And he took me back to the sponsor. His main job is to guide you through these steps. You know, and when he went through this, I already had a sponsor. So he said, you have a sponsor, but you need to keep using them. And he pointed out about the home group, because he used the word service about 3 times in this little list. He said, the most important service you'll ever do to the fellowship is in your home group. You know, that's a place where when it's your home group, you're the host. And you're going to have guests come in. And when you go to my home group, I'm the host. And I want to be prepared when you get there. So it's about preparation. He talked about the connection of a home group, about people who know you in a way other people don't because they see you on a regular basis. He talked about the commitment. And then he talked about the sponsor and connected it to the steps. Was quick to tell me, you just need to worry about the first step now or the first 3 steps. He said, don't get carried away, but work the steps to the best of your ability on a daily basis. He had little notes. And then he said, then he prayed in the morning and thanked God at night. And he said, you know, and I know you struggle with this. He said, and I also know you're a prideful man. You're a prideful man, Ron Lash. You have trouble asking people for help. So he said, the God of my understanding, I don't know about yours, but the God of my understanding gives us one another to do his work. He does much of his work through us. So you need to learn how to ask others for help. And I know that's difficult. He said, but when people give you that help, there's a responsibility that goes with that. You need to give that help to others. You need to carry it on. Kind of like pay it forward. And then the last thing, so he talked about service there, about giving it back. And then the last thing he had on there is you've got to give it to service. You've got to give it to keep it away. You got to give it away to keep it, is how it was put on there. And it's about service. It's about when you're asked to do anything. And there's so many forms of service. And I was so happy to hear Dan speak yesterday on the seventh tradition and talk about it's not just the contribution we put in the basket. It's service that we do. It's the things we do for one another to keep this thing going. The commitment to the home group, the commitment to the area, the commitment. So Kenny shared that with me. But, I've been thinking more recently how much he emphasized service, giving back. And really, the more we give, the more we get. You know what I'm saying? And Devin and I were talking a number of times this weekend about how my life is today. My life today is so full. I am so blessed. My ex-wife is still a very close friend. She often describes, my second wife, she describes our relationship as we were destined to have a lifelong friendship. It was interrupted by a marriage. But I remember I was reading this book, How to Be Rich in 30 Days or something. She laughed. She goes, she said, you're talking about wealth. You'll never be wealthy. She said, you get a little bit and you're giving it to this person, giving it to that person. She said, people to get wealthy, they hold on to their shit. She said, but you know what? You'll always be rich. It depends on how you measure. She said, but if you measured richness by friendship, you'll always be rich. And she's so right about that. Do you know what I mean? Like, I'm a rich man today. I am a rich man. I'm a blessed man. And I love life. And I usually keep track of how many days I have because it's just for today. And I just want to talk for a minute about clean time. They do the clean time countdown. The message is hope. The promise is freedom. Clean time countdown is hope. Hope. I remember my I was sponsoring the other fellowship, and they had a 15-year medallion. I had a heart attack. And he said, you need to go pick up your medallion at your home group. And I'm like, on my anniversary time, I was in the hospital. And I'm like, I ain't getting no medallion. That was the first year I knew they ever had anything. They didn't give medallions back in the day for nothing. I'm not getting no medallion. You know what I mean? I don't want to stand up there in front of people. You know, it ain't about that. He said, you still don't get it, do you? You still think you're doing it for you. We do it for others because it gives them the hope shot. What I learned from that lesson is the 13,000 whatever days I have clean, they ain't my time. They're your time because that's a truth for me that goes back to the beginning. Because those guys and all the people that came with me and the people in this room, you know what? You're my hope. You're my inspiration. You're what keeps me coming back. And I know how I glow when you stand up. Well, I can't wait to get to Andy's home group at his anniversary. You know what I mean? Your time is my time. Your time. That's what brightens my spirit. So I know because of that, my time is your time. That's what it is. And in the end, all any of us have is just for today. Just for today. I don't want to overlook the value of this day. We've been blessed. What a beautiful day we have. We've had a standing joke about that over the weekend. But... My life, I need to talk for a moment about the 10th step and about the consistency that it provides for me. I run inventories, but I like to run an inventory at the end of my day, and I like to look back over my day. And what I can tell you is this. In all those days I've been clean, I've never been 100% in recovery. Every day, there's a part of the day that's in recovery, hopefully more of the day. There's a part of the day that's relapse, when I'm not in recovery. And for me, that's the part that if I don't clean up my mess every day, that'll take me back out there. The relapse doesn't start when I pick up. The relapse starts when I'm carrying yesterday into today and carrying those days and carrying all that baggage and getting away from the principles and not staying current. So when I end my day, I like to reflect back on the day, see what opportunities I had, where I had opportunities to apply spiritual principles and where I did, where I had opportunities and where I fell short, where I didn't, where I acted out on character defect. And then what that does is takes me into the 11th step, the prayer and meditation thing. And my experience with that step is I went into this monastic state for about a year. And when I realized that I was doing these steps a year at a time, I devoted a year to the 11th step. And I was going to have a relationship with this God in my life like no one ever had. I mean, forget Moses, Jesus Christ, Buddha, whoever. You know what I mean? For Allah, I was going to have this relationship. You know what was standing in my way? People. Now, I did go to my home group. I did go out shopping, usually at an all-night supermarket. You know what I mean? I did go to work when I had to. I was around people. But when I didn't have to, I was reading these different books because I was going to have this relationship. And I think it was Murph that came over, or it might have been my ex-wife. Or people would come over to see how I was doing. I haven't seen you, da-da-da. People from my home group, I couldn't wait to get rid of them because I was on this journey. You're interrupting, you mere mortal human. When I realized that I was pushing valuable people, the real value out of my life, God let me see that. And He also let me know this. Any connection I have with Him is based on my connection with my fellows. It's based on my we. It's based on my connection with you. I can't have a relationship with a God of my understanding without you. So where that goes for me is really, it takes me back to when I did my ninth step. My sponsor directed me to do my hardest one first. Well, that was going to be my father. And I went through this whole thing, and he's an impatient guy, and he got things to do, and he's like, how long is this going to take? It's a nice day. I got this to do, that to do. Oh, Dad, about 20 minutes. I gave him that old sales pitch. Well, and I had notes because I didn't want to miss anything. But every time I hesitate, he'd be like, or I'd choke back some tears or fear, or he'd be like, are we done yet? Is that it? No, I'm almost. Are we done? Yeah, we're done. Finally. He got up and he hit for the door, and I thought it was going to be a thing that we're going to bond father and son, like father knows best, you know, like the Brady Bunch, like, oh, I've been waiting for a lifetime for this moment. He couldn't wait to get out of there. He put his hands on the door and off, and he said, I'm sorry, Chuck, I got away from the mic. Put his hand on the doorknob, and he said, I got one thing to say to you. Talk's cheap. And out the door he went. That didn't come close to what my expectations were. A little thing in me, just like somebody twisted, you know that pain that draws? You feel it. You feel it in your gut and in your chest. What he gave me that day is such a gift. Talk is cheap. It's not about what we say. It's about what we do. And for me, What the 12th step is the 11th step in action. Gratitude's an action word. When I apply that, you know, it's about living the prayer. It's about listening to life around me. It's about a connection. And for me, I think a friend of mine, Sister Eleanor, she sums up spirituality this way. She said it's about relationships. It has to do with my relationship with God. My understanding. It has to do with my relationship with my fellow man. It has to do with our relationship with nature. It has to do with our relationship to ourselves. The gift for me is this. When I was that restless addict, looking for comfort, wanting to shut off the noise, drugs did it. That's what kept me going back. Drugs did it. I would look for the right combination to where I'd have that mellow high, and I would feel ever so briefly okay with me, okay with you, and okay with the world. That's the high for me. And I'd take more to stay there. I don't have to tell you what happened. You're falling out. You're creating more of a crisis. You got to come down, and the mess is worse. But then I'd go again to feel okay with me, okay with you, and okay with the world. Just for that brief moment. I have a friend from Oakmont, Denny. He talks about there's too much downtime in addiction for that. How long do you have to glow? But my experience is this. Today, 24/7, more often than not, I'm okay with me. I'm okay with you. I'm okay with the world around me. And today, I've got a relationship with the God, a higher power that I choose to call God today. And I'm connected. I have you people to thank for that. All your predecessors, back to the day when I came in, and the predecessors that started the fellowship, and the predecessors that found the steps in the tradition. So I'm grateful for that. But again, it's not about what I say, it's about what I do. So if you see me stepping out of line, call me on it. You know what I'm saying? I want to thank you. I want to thank the committee for asking me. And it's been an honor. I just love this retreat. I just love it. And the committee, you did a bang-up job. Thank you.